Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hi, I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
This is Maltin on Movies. And you lucky people are about to listen to us talk to a very special guest today, Amy Adams. Welcome,
Hi.
Amy.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, I hope you won't mind this. I really hope. But we're going to puff up your ego a lot today.
A lot. Super.
Because
like
we're such fans.
Aw,
we're both such unadulterated, unabashed fans of yours.
Aw, that's very sweet.
And,
few people know that my mom, my dad, and I all have matching tattoos with your name.
Oh, no,
as a tramp
don't.
Stamp. No, we don't.
But I wish we believe it about you.
I wish.
Almost.
Yeah, I know, right? I know. I would. That's the problem.
No, don't. That's permanent.
Yeah.
You know.
And I hardly need to add that Amy's in two of the most lauded and prominent films of the year-end avalanche of movies, Tom Ford's Nocturnal Animals and Denis Villeneuve's Arrival. And you're getting acclaim and awards and being quite properly praised for the wonderful work you've done. So there are two performances that Jesse wanted to start by talking about.
To me, they're your finest and the most important. One is Drop Dead Gorgeous.
Yeah, go Muskies.
Right?
Yeah.
And I knew you. And of course, Psycho Beach Party.
Oh,
and these
thank
are two
you.
Of my very favorite movies.
Thank you.
I watch them maybe too often for some people.
I don't know.
But
I don't know.
And I didn't realize that Drop Dead Gorgeous was your first film.
Yeah.
Because it's such, I love that movie. A lot of people don't know it as well. It's 1999 and it's the cast is crazy. It's Kirstie Alley, Kirsten Dunst,
Ellen Birkin,
Allison Janney, Brittany Murphy.
Denise Richards.
Yeah. It's just like there's so many great people in it. And you play it's about a beauty pageant.
Yeah, I play Leslie Miller.
You do, and you are the slutty slut.
Yep,
and I love it.
That's how I got my start out
right?
in Los Angeles.
Right?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
But the thing is, and
the Washington Monument. Oh, there you go. Are you happy?
You have no idea. I can go home and cry pretty much.
I love that.
The thing that I love about this movie, and to me, and I was saying this to my dad because it's the same with Psycho Beach Party. In both of these movies, we get to see the thing that you do best, which is play everything completely honestly and earnestly. And I just, it's funny to me because I think about all the stuff that I've seen you in. And the first compliment that collectively we give you is that everything is real and we always believe you. And there's no, the phrase that LM here likes to use is you don't wink at the camera.
No.
So when you do something like Drop Dead Gorgeous, where you're playing this really funny character who doesn't mean to be ditzy or slutty, it's just her way of life.
Yeah, she doesn't think that she's either of those things.
No, not
yeah.
at all. So yeah. you can't play it like, that's right, folks.
Absolutely.
Here I am.
Absolutely.
And Psycho Beach Party is so much fun, and not a lot of people have seen all the things that Charles Bush has done, but I love him, and he cracks me up.
He's really funny.
And again, you have to play it for real. Because mm-hmm. that's the only way it works. So to me, it just makes complete sense that you would then make the movies you've made. So in something like Doubt, we believe you as a nun who is conflicted.
Yes.
In Enchanted, one of my favorite movies of all time. And by the way, you can't see her right now, but you are in like a modern Giselle ensemble.
I'm kind of, I suppose.
A little, you know, not so much
it
of a full skirt.
It does match my eyes.
Right?
Yeah. I like doing my character impersonations for you.
I'm okay with
they're
that.
They're not impersonations, I guess, because I did it. But
it's, no.
Impersonations of myself.
By Amy Adams.
It's a new club act, ladies and gentlemen. We're debuting
exactly.
right here.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
No, not at all. Never embarrassing.
Amazing.
Never that. But yeah, so that's, you know, we do. We love everything we've seen you in.
Thank you.
And so to go from those two to something like Catch Me If You Can, and this bowled him over.
Well, I was looking over your resume today, and I'm fascinated by the trajectory of careers because mm-hmm. no one gets to plan their career.
Absolutely.
Just as no one gets to plan their life. As they say, man plans and God laughs.
Yeah.
You don't know. You can't tell. You can't predict. So how did you feel when you got cast by Steven Spielberg? in this big movie opposite Leonardo DiCaprio. And I mean, Martin Sheen cast as your father. And that was in 2002.
Yeah. I felt it was one of those things where I felt like I was going to wake up, you know, mm-hmm. It felt like somebody else's reality.
Mm-hmm.
But I also got really serious and I was like, I'm going to work really, really hard and make sure I do it. Like, I put a lot of pressure onto myself too, because they're, you know, being in the film with Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks and Martin Sheen and all of these amazing actors who had this body of work, I was like, I'm going to hang. I'm going to, like, do my best to sort of hang with them in this movie. And so I took it really seriously. I think that's what it is I'm very serious. No, I'm not. I'm silly, but I'm a very I get very studious.
Work and, ethic.
Yeah
it's work ethic. You learn that in dinner theater.
You know, right?
Yeah, it's true. You do. So.
Well, of course you do, because you've got to deliver the goods.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're in theater, dinner theater, any kind of theater.
Any kind of theater.
Like, that's it. It's up to you.
Yeah.
There's no director. Once it's going, it's up to you.
Absolutely.
Especially with dinner theater and you're working over the sounds of clanking plates and glasses and silverware.
Luckily, that was only after the dessert at intermission.
Good to know.
Usually
to
that
know.
Was the Sunday. But
the life you have lived.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. But I think that's where I felt. It's like, I got really nervous. And I was like, I better be able to hang with these guys. So I just got really focused. And
What is your clearest or most interesting memory of Mr. Spielberg as a director?
I remember him having a lot of energy, and I remember Janusz Kaminski, the mm-hmm. cinematographer, going, oh, this is nothing. You should see him when he had just hurt his knee or something, and usually he's like on the floor and stuff. And I was like, he has more energy than this, probably. It was really amazing, his passion, his ability to sort of roll with the situation. But the thing I remember the most is I was having trouble with a scene, and instead of getting frustrated or, some directors can, you feel them get very tense and it sort of adds pressure to the moment. He came up to me and very gently just said, you're acting from here. And he touched my head and he says, act from here. And he touched my, well, he didn't touch my heart, but he implied.
Right.
You know, I'm like, he didn't. I'm now patting my cleavage, so he didn't do that. But I'm sorry. Now I'm being so silly. But he was basically just communicating to act from the heart, to let go of sort of my intellectual expectation of the scene and just mm-hmm. be present in it. And that's kind of what I've taken.
Well,
from that.
It's that's as good a
list. Yeah, not a bad thing to take.
You could ask
it's
for.
A good one.
But I mean, but if one were planning this career, mm-hmm. or then tracking this career, you'd say, well, then there's your launch pad.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a Spielberg movie, Leonardo DiCaprio. This is it. You're set. You're all set. You're on your way.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't quite happen that way. Because
no.
It was several years before you had another really good break. And that turned out to be in a small movie, not a big movie. It was mm-hmm. Junebug, of course.
Yeah.
And that equally unexpected, and it really did turn to big things and turn things around for you.
It did.
Did you feel it as you were making it, that Junebug was special?
I mean, the experience was special, and mm-hmm. the way that we shot it, I can't imagine ever doing that again. It was shot for under $1 million. In North Carolina, and we all lived like the block where the house that we filmed in. We all lived in houses on that block.
Mm-hmm.
Like Celia Weston lived upstairs from me, you know. And I think it had been shut down due to some sort of environmental issue. And we were all like, "Yeah, sounds great. I'll definitely stay there." So there was this intimacy, and this we didn't have that long to work, and it just mm-hmm. it was a special family of actors. Scott Wilson and M. Beth Davis and Alessandro Nivolo and Benjamin McKenzie. We all were just we were all there in it together. It was a really wonderful experience. But I didn't have any idea that it would change things.
Were you at Sundance when it premiered there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And were you there for like the first showing when it exploded?
I don't know that I had a sense of it, you know? Mm-hmm. I think because of things with Catch Me If You Can, I was at that point had a healthy, I'd been humbled by, you mm-hmm, know, people mm-hmm. making projections about what mm-hmm. could happen.
Sure.
And so I had everything in perspective, and I was, I was surprised that people found Ashley so funny because I found her so tragic.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, I guess she is kind of funny when you look at her from the outside, because from the inside, she didn't feel funny.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So that was a surprise.
I just cry like crazy when I watch that movie.
Yeah. Like, it's a tough one.
I can't put it on that often as much as I love it, because I just know that I'm wrecked for the rest of the day.
Yeah. You know? It still gets to me when I think about Ashley and her relationships and her relationship with God. And she was a fun one to play.
So you got a special jury prize from Sundance and then an Academy Award nomination.
Yeah.
And again, not for the Spielberg film, of course.
No,
but for the little movie.
Yeah.
And so again, go figure out a career. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
It just sort of,
you can never guess why or how or, you know.
I've always felt that it's a combination of good choices and then good luck.
Yeah, I agree. I do think there's a lot of luck involved.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of timing, you know.
Obviously hard work, you know, and dedication. It goes without saying.
Yeah, but I know a lot of actors who work really hard and who are really dedicated who don't get the opportunity that then turns into other opportunities. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't get that. Yeah. And so...
And of course, the most important thing to come from all of this is how often you're featured on the best dress list. I know that at the end of the day,
am I? Because I feel like I try not to read it anymore because there's a couple bloggers who hate me, and then it becomes comedy, and it's really funny.
I will cut them. Tell me who they are. Give me their names.
Yeah, I will. When we're done, I won't do it. But
yeah, right.
I will, because now I read them because it's like everything I want to put on my Facebook page, like. Well, if I had a Facebook page, on my husband's Facebook page, because they are just so, they love to insult me. But anyway.
Yeah.
They're
wrong.
They'll get theirs.
And, it's okay. It's all, I understand that it's sort of, they're living too, you know. They can't just say positive things.
Can't they though? Can't they maybe?
Well, too much negativity in this world.
Yeah. You know what? As long as my husband and my daughter... or telling me I look okay, I'm good.
Right?
You know?
Fine.
Right?
My
fine.
Husband's happy.
He's become obsessed with In Variety. There's they grade.
A weekly Variety has a fashion page now. Where they
grade?
A+, A-, B-, C-,
and
D.
And it's three. It's,
do they do it with men, too?
Yes, they do it with men and women.
They probably felt like they had
three
to.
Women there three women and three men. And my
equally,
favorite thing.
They're equally mean and inscrutable.
But... he gets really angry at this list. He goes, is that a C+? You tell me. Does she really look like a C+ in that? And I'll tell you.
I didn't even follow this.
Daddy, I didn't
page.
Care.
That
it is.
Gets to me.
It is. They're grading people on it. But just
in
of,
variety?
Yeah.
Uh-huh, of the things I thought my dad and I would have many conversations about.
That's all I have about that.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. We can do better than
I mean,
yes, you can.
We have so much going on in our industry to talk about.
Few people know that not only does he love film, but apparently he also really hates mean fashion writers.
There we are. So
not a happy camper.
I have a couple I can sick yawn.
Right?
Thank you.
We're ready.
If I need to expand my horizons, I'll know who to ask. The next film that springs into our mind, our collective mind, is Enchanted, because it's just such a wonderful movie, and it's made from such a pure place.
Mm.
And you're just right. You're just so perfect as Giselle.
Thank you.
And I told you we were going to keep pumping up.
Yeah,
your
yeah,
you're so sweet.
But it's true. I mean, there are other actresses who could have conceivably played that part, but I don't think anyone on the planet could have brought to it what you did and do to all your roles.
Oh, you're so
again,
sweet.
I mean, you really bring that character to life in a way that we care about you, we love you, and again, we believe you.
Yep.
We believe you, and you're wearing that incredible gown that Mona May designed.
Mona May did such a great job on the costumes.
We're
didn't
very
she?
Lucky because we've gotten to know Mona over the years.
Oh, have you?
And she just never ceases to astound me.
Yeah.
And learning about how all of that was made, the $60,000 a piece Susan Sarandon outfit,
the leather,
and that's so. I saw Enchanted 3 times in theaters. I've never had that happen in my life.
Wow.
Ever. What it was I saw it with my dad. And it was completely different audiences, too, which really made it. I saw it with my dad, and it was a morning screening at Disney on the lot, and it was a bunch of kids. And they went nuts for it. They loved it, except for the kiss, because that got a lot of ew.
Yeah.
But then it was going to be in his class at USC.
Wow.
And I watched it there with students, ranging in age, in some cases 18, but into
mostly 20-somethings.
20-somethings. And they loved it. And then my mom and my grandma asked me if I would take them, and I said, sure. So we all went to the El Capitan, which is, if you don't know, an amazing theater in Los Angeles and beautiful and beautifully kept up. And they had an exhibit in the back of the costumes.
Oh, cool.
And so I saw it with my grandma and my mom at the El Capitan, and we walked back and got to look at all the costumes. So that movie, I've seen it enough times and listened to the soundtrack on repeat to know that it is just perfect.
Oh, Kevin Lima, the director, did such a great job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he fought for me, you know. They brought me in and I read for it, and I remember talking. I don't often say this. I don't often read a role. I don't think I've ever said it since, and I never said it before where I read something and I was like, I honestly don't know who else they're going to get to do this. I was like, literally, it was like Signs, you know, the NHL, like everything that had happened up to that point in my life just pointed to this movie.
Oh,
I was like, there's just, my whole life makes sense now. I was meant to do this movie. That's why all of these things have happened.
Absolutely.
Well, it's true. And it's true. It's meant to do that movie.
But it's funny. I haven't had that since. Like, I love everything that I do.
Sure.
But that's the one time I read a script and I was rehearsing it with my husband and I just was like, I honestly don't know who else is going to do it. That kind of confidence coming in where I was just like, hey guys, I'm Giselle. And, you know, they went through the process of casting and Kevin just kept coming back to me and I'm so appreciative.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Because, you know, and then Disney, then Junebug started opening and all of that, so that helped as well. But so it was a real, again, you talk about lucky, you know. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. But you got to do musical numbers in Central Park.
I mean, amazing.
In the most fabulous gowns.
Okay, but it was like 102 degrees.
Was it?
Things you don't know. Like we were like losing the dancers left and right.
Oh God.
Yeah, it was hot.
I thought that was a dance move. Apparently, they're just fainting.
But it was so much fun to film in New York and get to do the exteriors that we did in New York were really fun.
Is it really happening? Disenchanted.
It's in development. Yeah, I have sat at Disney and had conversations and had a phone call with the director, and we're all really excited. It's funny because I was so precious. Enchanted is very, it holds a very special place in me as well. And I was always very cautious, like, oh, I don't know how I feel about a sequel. And then something happened, I think in the last year, actually, where I just was like, no, I think actually we do. We need Giselle. We need her.
We do.
We need her to come tell a story. I don't know what it is yet, but So I was like, you know what? I think if we can find a way to do this and hold the integrity of the first film, and everyone involved is really excited to find a story and find a way to tell what she's been through in the past. Mm-hmm.
And you
10
got
years.
To sing at the Oscars.
Got to.
Had
to.
Mean,
that was terrifying.
But
she was there for that. Sorry, there's a friend of mine in the room. Megan was there and I was not calm. Let's just put it that way.
Well, this was the thing. So they gave, I'm a theater nerd, right?
Yeah.
They gave Kristen Chenoweth this huge number to do from the film, and they had dancers, and it was like every kind of creature you can imagine appearing and dancing, and then they put you out there by yourself singing, and you killed.
Super.
And I loved it, and I'm sorry you were, I wasn't stressed for you. I sensed it would be okay.
Yeah, I had a bit of a meltdown, I'm not gonna lie. Where I was like, why did I agree to do this? This is the worst idea ever. Like, I shouldn't have agreed to do this. I can't take it to the Oscars. I don't do this. It was important to me, though, to sing so that people knew that I did the singing. Like,
right.
It was a strange, point of pride. I really wanted to be like, no, I sang these songs.
Yeah.
There was Eric Vitro. He's a vocal coach. And I think he was there with Kristen or somebody.
Yeah.
And he noticed that I was panicking. And he said, here, come back here. And he just started running scales with me, and he looked at me and he said, what was your favorite part of playing Giselle? And I was like, that she spread joy. that no matter what she was going through, she tried to find the positive. She would spread joy. He goes, "That's all, then just go out there and spread joy. Just be Giselle." And I was like, you know what? He's right. I just have to be Giselle. I'm not Amy Adams singing at the Oscars. I'm Giselle singing at the Oscars. So he reminded me that
it wasn't me. It was the character.
You know, so that was helpful.
Moments like that, I mean, I over the years, I've collected anecdotally stories about, and it always seems that like the best direction are the small nuggets like that that somebody gives you that just turns a key and opens something in your in your mind, in your heart, in your being somehow.
Yeah.
That allows you to do what you need to do.
Yeah. It's very much, it's, you know, sort of stop being you and be the character, you know. Mm-hmm. Get out of your way and let the character live through you. It's almost, it's very freeing.
Speaking of great directors, did you enjoy working with Mike Nichols on Charlie Wilson's War?
So much.
People just adored working with him.
Adored him.
What was this so special about him in your mind? This is Charlie Wilson's War, a film that deserves, I think, a better break than it got. I know it had some production problems, but it's so good. The material is great. The cast is fantastic.
Mike is so smart and so funny and so quick. And the way he sees things is so uniquely him. And the way he would see a scene, kind of the things he would take out of life, like he kind of loved... he loved the idea of, like, there's a scene that they're kind of show of, like, me drinking a martini on the base of the stairs with, like, her two dogs or something, and that's not in the script. We just had, like, 10 minutes, so he's like, "Sit down, dogs, come in, get the dogs, make him sit, here, take this glass," and he's like, sip it, chug it, you know, like, it's just, there's this immediacy, but it's, like, in a really fun, there's a spirit about it, you know, there was such an energy and a spirit, and another example of him sort of thinking in that way is we were in rehearsals, and Mike was one of those people I really wanted to please. Mm-hmm. I always want to please directors, but definitely Spielberg. But for some reason, Mike Nichols, I just wanted to please. I wanted to do such a good job for him and like please him. And so I was being really like pert and like, you know, trying to be very quick about getting back to my starting place, and he just started howling, and I was like, "What's up? What are you laughing at?" He's like, "Your ponytail, it just swings, it swings, it swings," and he's like, "I'm putting it in the movie," and I was like, and that's how that scene with the following her up came from, and he sort of started, you know, there was just something about him.
I've often thought you have a very swingy ponytail.
I actually do.
It's the first thing.
I really do have a pert ponytail.
He does come up, he came out of improv comedy.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that he would pick up on little
absolutely.
things.
Absolutely, and that shows, and I think that, you know, I can speak for myself that I love that energy of being open for discovery in each moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, you now have a title for your autobiography. Amy Adams' pert ponytail.
My pert ponytail.
That's where you go with that.
Now, I was reading an interview or an article about Arrival, and it talked about how you, as an actress, you ask your director and sometimes the screenwriter lots and lots of questions because you want to know everything you can possibly know about the character in order to play her honestly and play her fully. But when you played Amelia Earhart, I'm wondering, in Night at the Museum, the sequel, Battle for the Smithsonian, I wonder, since that was a lighthearted film and it was a comedy and wasn't meant to be terribly real, did you still feel you needed to embody Amelia Earhart?
Qualities that I felt, like a certain archetypal quality that I wanted to embody. They had really talked about me sort of... emulating the they wanted her to have like sort of a Katharine Hepburn energy or like a real sort of you know, that 1940s she was written in a very specific way. And I liked the idea that she had that can-do spirit and all that kind of good stuff that, you know. So I had a blast doing that. And I remember it's okay that I keep going off and all my anecdotes, right?
Anytime.
Yes, it's okay.
I remember doing the table read, and I was, like, kind of off book and in Ben's face. And Sean was like, "Ben is so, like, doesn't know what to do with you right now." Because I was, like, you know, doing Amelia. But it was fun. We ended up having a lot of fun kind of playing on that dynamic, you know.
And it's nice that you've had both.
Yeah.
You've had really serious, tough stuff, and then you've also had some really fun.
I haven't done a comedy in so long. I was just thinking about that. I was like, oh, I just want to... Kristen Wiig.
I want to not weep at night. Is that so much to ask for?
Just saying.
So what movies do you like to watch?
I know you guys, we all sort of look alike. We can be related. Okay, sisters. I can be the uptight one or not. Or the mute. I don't care.
In other words,
I just want to go play.
In other words, our guest is saying she's available.
There you go.
Yeah.
So what movies do you like to watch? What do you like?
I feel like I've lost, since having my daughter, I've kind of lost my way film-wise a little bit. I mean, what's great is we do have this sort of end of the year avalanche, like you say. And being a member of the Academy, I take
screeners
it super seriously too. And I like won't vote if I don't see everything. So so I end up kind of binging on screeners or sort of back-to-back in a theater.
Right.
But I've been... I've gone to the theater for like every family movie. Like you understand why like Moana does so well. And
sure. Yes.
Because I'm one of those parents, you know, at the 9 a.m. screening, you know, with my daughter.
How old is she?
Been there,
she's
done
six.
That.
Yeah. And, but what's great is like family films are really good.
Yeah.
Like Inside Out. Come on. That was so amazing.
Oh, well. Yeah. That film wasn't really for children. They were just pretending.
I know.
We were
weeping.
Yeah.
And Aviana is like, San Francisco, you ruined pizza. Like, that's her favorite thing. And we're just like, no, it's, you know.
It means a lot more than that. You don't understand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, that's a very deep movie.
Yeah.
It's a very deep movie, very soulful.
Yeah.
And it really got to me.
Yeah.
As I think it gets to parents in particular in a way that and Pixar does amazing things all the time, but that one really had resonance in so many different ways.
But I'm lucky because my daughter likes a lot of films, so she also likes Miyazaki.
Oh yeah.
Oh great.
So we're watching a lot of like Howl's Moving Castle, Spirited Away. Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, if you get a screener,
My Neighbor Totoro,
The Red Turtle.
Okay.
The Red Turtle is a film that was co-produced by Studio Ghibli.
Oh, I love but
done by a French filmmaker, a French-Swiss filmmaker. No, French filmmaker. And it's all in pantomime. There's virtually no dialogue in the film.
Okay.
I think he says, hey, out loud at one point.
Wow.
And it's a beautiful story and kind of mystical the way they can be.
Yeah. I love that.
That's worth sharing with you. Now, have you shared old movies with your daughter? I know you're a fan of classic Hollywood.
Yeah, some of them. Some. Yeah, we're kind of warming her into like 80. We're starting with like 80s.
Super old
with 80s.
Classic movies.
And we're going back.
Right.
I'm trying to think. She's kind of in this. We'll see. I mean, we showed her when she was younger. She watched like Singing in the Rain
sure.
and, you know, some musicals, Wizard of Oz and all those good classics. But we haven't gotten into sort of the other ones
It's
yet.
A process.
It's a process.
It's a process.
I'm going to wait.
Yeah.
We introduced her to Back to the Future, and who knew they swore so much in that movie?
Really?
Next thing you know, my daughter's like, that's some damn good ice cream. I was like, Oh, dear. That's really,
I know.
Thank you.
See, that's the thing, that's what I found as a parent when Jesse was young, is that nobody warns you about simple stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, yeah, this is fine to take your kid to see. And then they forget to tell you that they're not thinking of it.
Yeah.
There's sort of either casual use of language or a casual reference or two.
Yeah.
Or maybe somebody doing something really mean. Jesse ran out of a screening room one time at Disney when they were showing Tom Sawyer, a remake of Tom Sawyer, because it was Huck Finn.
Huck Finn.
Because Huck Finn's Pap character is really a mean son of a gun.
Yeah.
And being a 90s movie, they did it in a very full-blooded way. Boy, she was out of that door.
Wow.
Out of the room, out of the studio. Well, anyway, back to business.
No, okay.
But not really. But this is what we like to talk about with our guests.
Yeah.
Now, you also had the experience of being directed by one Clint Eastwood.
I wasn't directed by him.
Oh, that's right.
Right.
Robert Lorenz directed it.
Exactly.
And he was in it and he produced it.
Yes.
So tell us about working opposite him in a scene. So we're talking about Trouble with the Curve, another movie I like that kind of got short shrift.
You know, it was interesting because one of the first scenes I had to do with him, I had to pretty much like take him to task. And like taking Clint Eastwood to task is not on the list of things that I think would be comfortable.
Several bodyguards just around in case he gets angry.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was great. It was actually really wonderful to sit across him as an actor, you know? And I'm curious as to what his experience was. But it was really fun. It was really amazing to sort of work with kind of a legend, you know? And to have that experience and to get that, it's those things you start working, like Clint has this very specific, like when he laughs and his eyes get really, really small, that's then you've really accomplished something. So like that's what I like started like working for. I find that I sometimes like find myself working for certain things, you know?
Oh yeah.
Like, yeah, but Clint was really, really fun to work with.
I love it.
Yeah.
Now, you've now been nominated 5 times for the Academy Award, and it's likely, we can say this, it's likely you're about to be nominated a 6th time.
I don't know. It's packed here.
And
great performances. There's
a lot of good stuff to choose from here at this year-end season.
You're the new Meryl.
So we won't jinx anything or belabor any point.
Well, look, it's all...
But what was your experience like the first time you went as a nominee for Junebug?
My goodness. I was like, it was probably like a 4-year-old at Disneyland. Like, right? I was just like looking at everything. I really took it in. I really had a good time.
Good.
Yeah, I did.
That's the most important.
I had a blast. I promised myself that I would have a good time and I did.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, loved it the first time. The second time I had an existential crisis. So.
Oh, dear.
I did.
Why?
I don't know. Maybe it was because we were all sitting in that semicircle.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. That year. And I don't know. I suddenly was like, I felt, I felt like, oh, my gosh, I'm here again. Like, do I really, like, I'm going to get found out? I don't really deserve to be here? Like, but this was happening at the Oscars.
Right.
It's very strange to be like questioning your worth while you've been nominated. I don't recommend it.
But other people have said the same thing.
Have they?
Yes, because it's kind of, you're on display and there's that aspect of it. But there is that thing that actors seem to have, even actors who aren't overly insecure, who normally have a decent amount of confidence about what they do, but that they don't deserve to be there with that person.
That's exactly what it was. I think it was that, you know, Meryl Streep was on one side of me. Sean Penn was on the other. You know what I mean? I was like, what am I doing here? Like, how did I, like in a great way. But in subsequent years now, I just have fun again.
Good.
It's not like I don't still have that moment of gratitude.
Yeah.
Now I focus on gratitude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good place to be.
Yeah. Exactly.
And you just said the magic name Meryl Streep.
Yeah,
yeah.
That is a magic name.
It is.
Well, it is. Yes. We're talking about the best of the best, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah, she really is.
And I'm sorry you didn't have scenes together in Julie and Julia, but
how great was she in that?
Fantastic.
Oh, so great.
And Stanley Tucci as well.
Oh, my goodness. The pair of them
in that film.
I know.
Just killer. But you did get to work with her in Doubt.
I did.
So what's it like being opposite her in a scene?
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Absolutely wonderful. We had a chance to rehearse, and it was me and Meryl and Philip Seymour Hoffman, and I can safely say that I was blown away watching them and learned so much.
Yeah.
And it was a really unique opportunity to go through 2 weeks of rehearsal in a room with those two.
Did you have to, like, scream a little bit first before you went in? Like, oh, my God, it's Meryl! And then you just, like, I'm cool.
I'm not kind of a freaker-outer in that way. I'm more like, oh, my God, it's Meryl. Like I have to act with her.
Right.
And so the wonderful thing that came to me during that rehearsal process is that sometimes what I'm going through and what my character are going through can coexist, and I let it coexist because I was trying to keep up with Meryl and Philip, and that wasn't the role that I was playing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I wanted to be powerful. I wanted to and I kept struggling and I was like, I'm not. And I finally realized like, oh, I'm not supposed to actually.
Yeah.
That's not my role in this. I'm not a powerhouse in this.
Yeah.
I'm an observer. And so I need to just let it be.
Wow.
But I had the best, most wonderful time. I have so many beautiful memories.
Yeah. And you got to work with Philip Seymour Hoffman again. I mean, 3 times
altogether. 3 times, yeah.
most significantly, I guess, in The Master from Paul Thomas Anderson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again, I don't know how to phrase this in a more interesting way, but we have the benefit of you sitting here. Tell us what it's like to watch him in his process, if you can.
Oh, God, it's so cool. It is. It was amazing. You know, when you work with really good actors who are committed, really committed to their craft and committed to their characters, if you allow yourself, they will take you into the world they've created with them. Mm-hmm. And I do my work too. It's not as though I'm not committed and create and working, but there's a wonderful ability when you've done your work to let go, and when you're with somebody who's so committed and skilled and has that sort of brilliance to them, Meryl, Philip, Christian Bale, so many I could keep going, but like they pull you into this world, and it starts to feel a little confusing. Like it's like a time warp. It's reality ceases to exist, and the only thing exists are the moments you're sharing, and that is the present reality, and that's the truth. But nothing else comes in, and it's really it's very. Very cool experience.
Yeah.
That's got to be the best. That sounds like the pinnacle of what you do.
Yeah.
What you get to do when you have a moment like that or a whole experience like that.
Yeah, and it doesn't happen all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, acting can be very technical. Mm-hmm. But when it does happen, it's this beautiful surrender. Mm-hmm. It's a very strange experience, yeah.
So when you're making a film like Arrival, where so much of what's happening around you is imaginary.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy Lee Jones has the greatest put down to this question I ever heard. I was interviewing him. You know, he's a tough interview. He's a notoriously tough interview. And I was talking to him about Men in Black 3, I think it was. And I asked him about, you know, having to imagine there's a giant bug there. He says, on any movie, I have to imagine there isn't a Teamster standing there eating a donut.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always using my imagination.
Yeah.
So I guess that's true.
It is.
But in Arrival, it's more specific.
It's very... none of the Teamsters were eating donuts in
Arrival. Okay, all right, good.
No, but it is. I mean, it's just an extension of sort of our job. But in Arrival, I think what made it interesting is that we had to develop sort of a relationship and a language and communication and compassion for these creatures that aren't there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you really have to trust the director, trust the actors you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the wonderful thing is, like, although I'm acting without something here, I did have Jeremy right next to me, or I had Forrest, you know.
Yeah.
You have other actors there, so you do have a safety net of knowing that you're all in it together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and so you don't feel quite so self-conscious.
Yeah.
When I first started doing work to, like, a piece of tape, even sometimes when you're doing a close-up, you have to look at a piece of tape because you can't look at the actor. It takes a while to sort of get used to.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when it's, like, very extreme, like in Nocturnal or in Arrival, you have to look almost like at a piece of tape and you're basically talking to tape.
I love when you see someone with a tennis ball.
Yeah.
And they just have to give everything they've got to the tennis ball.
You know what? I've never had a co-star abandon me and acted to a tennis ball. I've been so lucky. So I'm appreciative to all
of them. That's nice of them.
Awesome, awesome actors. Are you kidding? Tell a story about Meryl. Because I love her so much. And I kind of glossed over the experience. But I had to do that scene where I was yelling at her. And it was at the end of that scene, they block shot it, which means you shoot the whole thing in one direction, and then you shoot the whole thing in the other direction. Mm-hmm. It took us 3 days because it's a very long scene. And so everything was shot in that direction, and then they turned it around. So at the end of 3 days, you finally get to the end and the part where it's now on me. So we've been doing this scene now for 3 days, and now it's my close-up. And I kept flipping a word. And John Patrick Shanley, you know, he's a playwright, so words mean everything. He's right. Like, oh, Amy, can you change the order of the words back? And I kept messing up. And Meryl sat there for 11 takes. And that's not normal for me. I mean, some directors do a lot of takes, but, you know, Meryl and Philip were doing it in, like, 2 takes. And it was like, I kept flipping the word, and I was panicking. And Meryl did not falter in her energy. She did not ever lose her patience. There was nothing but support for me.
Mm.
And that's Meryl. She just gave me 100% every time on the other side of that camera.
Wow.
So
And that's how it's supposed
that
to be.
That is, but yes. she's...
It isn't always that way, but that's right. how, that is how it's supposed
well,
to
be. Well, not for 11 takes, you know. Three takes, and then they're like, ugh. I'm sure inside she was like, she flipped it.
Flipped it again.
Anyway, she was great. But anyway, I...
No, no, no.
We were talking about talking to tape, but...
Well, yeah, or talk to a ping pong ball or whatever it may be.
Yeah. No, we were... there were puppeteers with a kind of a fuzzy thing.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was that would operate behind the
whatever it did,
yours.
It worked. But also, I think this is the first film of yours. You'll correct me if I'm wrong, because I often am, where the story is told so much in your face in ultra close-up. I mean, a lot of Arrival is told through your face.
Yeah.
And your reaction to what's going on.
Yeah, I kind of realized that
when I
watched the movie. when you're doing it, I end up having a very, like, the camera, I know what size the shot is because you have to gauge
right
the performance.
Sure.
For the size of lens and all of that. Again, the technical side of acting, like, I can't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but I didn't really kind of think about that. I knew that I just was so invested in Louise that I wasn't necessarily paying attention to what the filmmaker's intent was as far as the focus on my face and kind of how necessary it was to be present, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I knew, of course.
Sure. But if any part of that was unconscious, then it worked to your benefit because it comes across.
Well, it's not unconscious. Like I knew, but how do I tell it? Of course, I knew, and I was conscious of it. I just didn't. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Different on a monitor to seeing it on a big screen.
Oh, yes.
And suddenly
that's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. Well, that's like I understood the shot and I understood the thing, but like to have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're seeing it,
and then
suddenly your face is the size of a building.
Had I thought about it, I might have been more self-conscious or more self-aware, mm-hmm. I think is what I was trying to say. Yeah, exactly. So because I wasn't sort of, I have this strange denial that anyone's ever going to see the movies when I'm doing it.
Whatever works for you.
Yeah.
It's fine.
So I was like, oh wow, that's a lot of face. But it might have created a little more self-consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm glad it did.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things we enjoy doing on our podcast is highlighting movies we think deserve to be better known. And there are two of yours I want to single out. One is Big Eyes.
Oh, thank you.
Which was written actually by friends of mine, Scott Alexander and Larry Karaszewski, who sat on this project for 11 years.
11 years.
Keeping it alive, renewing their option with the real Margaret, and making sure it finally happened because Tim Burton, who'd always been their ally in this, got interested. What an interesting character to play.
Yeah, I really, really liked playing Margaret. She was such a soft-spoken individual and yet had this sort of steely resolve.
Mm-hmm. You
know? She was, and she's fun when you meet her now. She's still paints every day. Like her painting is like, it's clearly her calling.
If you don't know, this is the story of Margaret Keane, who painted all those hugely popular prints that they sold by the carload of usually children, right, with big eyes, oversized eyes. And the backstory of this phenomenon is what constitutes the movie. Sure is interesting. And there's a much earlier movie of yours, though, that Jesse and I are both really, really fond of.
Sunshine Cleaning.
Oh, with Emily.
Sunshine Cleaning. First of all, it's the two of you. And I feel like you are similar people in that you're both talented in like 15 different things.
Aww.
But you also are just really lovely human beings.
Thank you. She is a lovely human being.
And that movie, though, man.
Oh, we had a hoot making that.
I'm sure.
So much fun. Yeah.
It's so good.
Thank you.
It's so good. Everything just clicks in that movie.
Thank you.
It's about, again, another oddball subject. And the screenwriter won a screenwriting competition because she heard a story on NPR about two real women.
Mm-hmm.
Were they both sisters in real life? Were they sisters in real life?
I don't even remember.
Yeah.
But it's about two women who in the film are sisters who are sort of at the end of their rope and stumble onto an idea for a job that'll change their life by giving them a good living.
Mm-hmm.
Cleaning up crime scenes.
Yeah.
The most awful, horrifying places to be. But they make a living at it, and it does start to affect their life in all sorts of positive but unlikely ways.
Yeah.
So it's a very offbeat film, but so entertaining.
Yeah.
I loved making that. I really liked that film, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good. I'm glad you second our
choice. Does this mean that you're really good at cleaning up after your daughter now?
No, I'm not good at cleaning at all. Like, you have now hit on the
dark side. The dark side of you.
Oh, my gosh. If you could see my house right now, it is shocking. I've been traveling so much. It's like,
I'm sure.
It's, yeah.
Now, you should have a good excuse, right?
Sure. I'll keep using that for, like, the next year.
Right.
Until I get it picked up.
Now, quickly, what can you tell us about your upcoming TV series?
Sharp Objects.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We're going to start filming it in March.
Mm-hmm.
And we've begun the casting process. And it's going to be really – I mean, we're just starting to get into it. But I was really pulled into this this character in this world when I read – the novel, and the first episode script was so compelling, and it's unlike anything I've done, and it deals with, for those who've read the book, they understand what it is, but it deals with sort of these young girls being killed in a small community, and she's a reporter, and she's sent back to sort of figure it out, but you sort of figure out this dynamic of her life and her childhood growing up while she's trying to solve this.
What?
And she's a very different character to what I've played before, so
That's exciting.
Yeah. I'm going to start really diving into her in the new year to sort of start working on her.
And are you allowed to say anything to us about Justice League?
No.
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 There is such a film, though.
Trust me. There is a film.
Okay.
I mean, it's pretty badass,
Jason
right?
Jason Momoa is very tall in it.
You're Lois Lane.
Yes.
You're Lois Lane.
Yes. It's really cool being here at Meltdown and being part of the Lois canon.
Yeah. What you can't see is there's a small mob forming downstairs. They're not really. I'm kidding.
No, that's just my joke.
So the last thing we're going to ask you, because you've been kind enough to give us your time, are there any movies that you would recommend to other people that you feel they may not know about? Or like, you know...
Mine are weird, though.
We like weird.
Okay.
We like weird.
Polly.
Okay.
It's the bird.
Yes.
Movie.
I love it so much.
It makes me cry every time I see
it. It's a good movie.
Yeah. Do you know that one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. So that's sort of my feel-good go-to.
Yeah.
When, is Polly. Let me think.
That's solid, though. I'll take that.
I don't know. The rest of them are kind of, I don't know if I have any. Oh, my gosh. There's this amazing Jack and the Beanstalk that was released in the 80s.
Okay.
And it's anime, and I think you can get it on DVD now, but it is the weirdest movie, and you must watch it.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Have you shared that with your daughter? Is it family
friendly?
Yes, she's
seen it. Okay. No.
No. Okay.
My daughter has I feel the need to explain that my daughter has a very, she's very precocious in her understanding of themes and understanding of reality versus fiction. So there are things I can show her. I think because I'm an actor, she really understands that none of it's real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And some of the themes she misses, but it's it can be a little scary for a younger crowd.
Okay. Well, appropriate warning then from a parent. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Amy, thank you so much for coming by today.
Thank you.
And congratulations on both films. If you folks haven't seen Nocturnal Animals, it is mesmerizing. It's an absolutely mesmerizing film. It's hard to describe, really, because there are two parallel stories, and they're both interesting. They're both compelling. And, I mean, you don't have any scenes with the people in the other part of the film, Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Shannon and those folks. But your story is a gripper, and so is theirs. It's a really good film.
Yeah.
And then there's Arrival, which we will mention again because it's just so darn good.
Thank you.
And congratulations on,
thank you so
on
much,
having
you
that back-to-back in your life. And I hope you enjoy the rest of the or endure the rest
chaos of the award season.
Award season.
Yep.
It's all good.
And thanks for including us.
Sorry. I'm like, I just reward myself with a burrito at the end of every.
Hell yes.
Everyone knows already.
And
like,
you've
I have one
it.
Place I go to, and I'm like, you know, my husband wants to stay at the parties, and I'm like, burrito.
Burrito.
So we got to go.
They should name it after you.
Yeah, right.
You should name this the Amy Adams burrito.
Yeah.
The Amy Adams after party burrito.
So good.
All right. That's the way to go.
Thank you for being here. Thank you all for listening. Since the holidays are upon us, it is incumbent upon me as an author to mention my own book again, because I've got to do that. It's Leonard Maltin's Classic Movie Guide, the third updated edition. 10,000 movie reviews of classic films, including 300 never included in any previous guide. You can get it wherever books are sold, online,
where
in person,
sold
in
exactly?
stores. Any place they sell books.
Where do they have
any
books?
Place they sell books. And thank you for considering that. It's been called a stocking stuffer, but you need a really heavy stocking.
A really sturdy stocking for this stuff.
And you can find me on Twitter at Leonard Maltin and online at leonardmaltin.com, where I have several posts about other current movie books if you're looking for a gift for a friend or a family member who happens to love movies.
We're the Jews that are here to help you with Christmas.
And Hanukkah.
And Hanukkah. Eight nights of books.
Eight nights to remember your dear and near. Oh, you're near and dear.
Either one.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcast FREE.